Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Medical Monday, June 21st. I'm Ray Graff. Support comes from MVP Healthcare, providing Medicare Advantage plans, including prescription drug coverage throughout New York and Vermont. Information available at MVPMedicare.com. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. Cliff Connery, chair of the Nuvance Health Cancer Institute. He's ready to answer your cancer questions and your oncology questions. If you have any sort of a question, I advise you to call very early on this program. It gets very crowded on a Medical Monday. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Email us if you want. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address, but the number again is 800-348-2551. Dr. Cliff Connery and your oncology calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. Cliff Connery, chair of the Nuvance Health Cancer Institute. Dr. Connery is a thoracic surgical oncologist in Poughkeepsie with over 37 years of experience caring for patients with lung cancers and tumors. Dr. Connery is skilled at minimally invasive robotic and video-assisted procedures, as well as complex thoracic surgeries. Dr. Connery completed his medical degree from Eastern Virginia School of Medicine. He completed his general surgery residency at Stony Brook, followed by a cardiothoracic surgery fellowship at the University of Rochester. He also served as a U.S. Army Reserve Medical Corps officer, advancing to the rank of major. If you have a question for Dr. Cliff Connery, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is our number, 1-800-348-2551. You can email as well, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Cliff Connery, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ray. I look forward to answering questions today.
Well, you know, every time we talk cancer on Medical Monday, the thing is always to talk about screenings and why they are important. Tell me, how much more treatable is it if you catch cancer early, and how late is too late?
Well, I think screening is one of the reasons why overall we've seen a significant improvement in survival and longevity with people who are affected by cancer. It really is of critical importance, not just because of our ability to treat it, but our ability to cure cancer. The earlier we find it, in general, is our best chance at providing the most value for cancer treatments.
You helped Nuvance become a screening center of excellence by the Lung Cancer Alliance. What does it mean to be a screening center of excellence?
Well, what it means is that you have a team. And that's one of the things that at Nuvance and what we had initially accomplished here, and other people are doing that, is you have a team that is interested in, understands the disease process, what the tools are, and so that you have a complete way to care for people with this type of screening. So you have specially treated, trained radiologists. You have surgeons who understand minimally invasive techniques to be able to manage these small screen-identified cancers. You have a team of pulmonologists who can help you prepare patients. You have navigation, where skilled nurses and other caregivers can organize the testing that is needed for people who have it. And in addition, you recognize that not everything that you see, in fact, the great majority of things that you see on a screening evaluation are not cancer. And so that you know to wait and to do the next type of intervention, which usually is follow-up imaging. So you understand the whole process of identifying early lesions and knowing which ones are important to follow up on.
Is medical science better at this now than it was, say, 10 years ago?
It is absolutely better, but it's still an evolving field. And so that's why we see changes in a number of these recommendations for screening, not just in lung, but in other diseases too, as we learn more about our techniques, as we get better technologies, and as we follow up on people who have had screenings, we understand the potential benefits and also what some of the potential harms are. And that's how we revise our screening recommendations.
We're joined today by Dr. Cliff Connery, chair of the Nuvance Health Cancer Institute. If you have a question about cancer today, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. I saw in your bio that you served as the New York State chair on the Commission of Cancer of the American College of Surgeons. First of all, what was that? Did you find out anything surprising?
Well, you know, what that position is, each American College of Surgeons Commission on Cancer certified program has a team that's part of the cancer program, and that includes a cancer liaison physician. And what that is a physician who understands what the quality aspects are. They're essentially a quality member for the Commission on Cancer. So you understand where you can apply your efforts to improve the care that you're giving to patients in your area. So each hospital, each program has certain areas where they can identify a project that will help improve the care for their patients. And that's something where, as the state chair, our job is to give people examples, learn them how to use the database that the Commission on Cancer has, the NCDB, which is a national cancer database of millions of cases of cancer that can be looked at to see how you are benchmarked against them and to learn where you could make improvements.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Doctor, while we're waiting for the lines to load up here, this email from Mike in Richmond. Mike said, could you discuss the connection between eating meat, especially processed meat, and the risk and or incidence of colon cancer?
Well, one of the things that you need to look at when you look at health overall for a variety of cancers is that you should be looking at maintaining a healthy weight. So that's really a critical aspect in reducing the risk for cancer. Reductions in obesity, reductions in sugary foods, eating increased fruits and vegetables. These are the types of things that can help improve your wellness as far as maintaining a weight is concerned. Also, looking at alcohol. So one of the things, and that when you take a look at, and you know, in reality, a lot of things in moderation, but having a diet that is high in processed foods, you know, in general, and fats increases your risk for certain types of obesity and secondarily increased risk for cancer.
By how much? In other words, if you eat a lot of crappy foods, for lack of a better description, and you have a couple of pops, do you have any quantitative data of how much more likely you are to get cancer?
Well, when you take a look at some of the weight issues and the poor diet issues, they can think as much as 40% of cancers are related to obesity and poor nutrition. And that's one of the things that is an issue. And that's also one of the issues as far as socioeconomic barriers to care. There are certain populations that have less access to good, healthy food. And giving ways for education and providing, you know, high-quality foods at an affordable cost, now that's something that we as a society should be looking at.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Cliff Connery joins us from Nuvance Health Cancer Institute. Let's grab one call before the first break, and then we'll hit the phones again. Josh in Red Hook. Josh, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Connery. Thank you. I was diagnosed 3 years ago with stage 4 lung cancer, and was treated. I had 3 treatments at 3 rounds of chemo, and then they switched me over to Keytruda. Because I had a high PD-L1 count, and I responded well as far as the tumor shrinkage with the chemo, but I really had a hard time tolerating it. So anyway, 3 years later, I'm NED with no evidence of disease, but I have a lot of side effects that have happened. One is I have a lot of pain, almost like debilitating pain in my neck and my shoulder. Can I get, I always had this idea that palliative care meant that I was going directly to hospice, and I'm not dying, not at the moment. So do you have any advice for what I do? I'm only allowed to take Tylenol because I have, the way they discovered my cancer was because I had a blood clot in my neck.
Josh, thank you very much for your story and your work, you know, as you work through this challenge with cancer. You know, I think the thing to do, the way to think of this is that it's not palliative care, to your point. You know, it really is supportive care. And sometimes people get caught up in that nomenclature, you know, the name. And that when you have stage four disease, and when you have other types of cancer, there are times when you need additional help for treatment of symptoms and for wellness, et cetera. And so you should look at this opportunity to have a supportive care, palliative care, if you want to call it that, consultation. And they can provide a lot of advice as to how to manage pain, discomfort, you know, fatigue. They've seen a number of people mm-hmm. who have been through a similar situation. And I think that would be of real value. We at Nuvance are trying to look at a way where we can make that more of a formal process where we have people mm-hmm. who at least get the introduction. And then as you need it, as you go through your journey with the cancer, that you mm-hmm. take the pieces that will be helpful to you as you need them. So I think that's really the way we should be looking at it, supportive care for people who are working through cancer and other diseases.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but if I was to look for a doc, who would I look for to help? Like what kind of?
One of the things would be to contact the people who are in the cancer program where you're being treated with. They usually have an affiliation with a supportive care program, a palliative care program, and they should have that referral mechanism. You know, some programs are more developed than others, but I would start there as an initial look.
Josh, thanks a lot for the call. We have to take a quick break here. It's Medical Monday. Dr. Cliff Connery of Nuvance Health Cancer Institute joins us. Our number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop, Medical Monday with Ray Graff. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number if you have a question for Dr. Cliff Connery, chair of the Nuvance Health Cancer Institute. 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Jim is in Matamoros. Jim.
How does chronic inflammation influence the development of some types of tumors?
Did you catch that, doctor?
I missed the first part. I heard the development of some kind of tumor.
Right. He says, how does chronic inflammation influence the development of some kinds of tumors?
That's a great topic, because in reality, when you take a look at one of the types of screening and some of the recommendations for screening, for example, inflammatory bowel disease in people who have colon issues or small bowel issues, that is a significant increased risk for the development of possible colon cancer. So they actually have revised the guidelines so that people who have chronic inflammatory issues such as that would have colon screening at an earlier age. And so when you think about the inflammatory process, that sort of stirs up a whole variety of mediators. You have a lot of activity going on, and that can increase the chance for a cancer developing with all that growth that is occurring and inflammation.
Jim, thanks very much for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And Dr. Cliff Connery, this email came in from Deb. Deb says, is hair dye potentially carcinogenic for people with autoimmune issues of the liver or just in general?
It's from Deb. Deb, I really don't know specifically about hair dyes and potential cancer of the liver. You know, when you think of a bunch of foreign substances, you always worry about the possibility of some issues, but I really have not I really have no data on that.
All right. This one is from Frank in Menands. Do you know anything about the relationship between PFAS chemicals and cancer? What's the latest research on that?
PFAS chemicals?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure what a PFAS chemical stands for and cancer.
I'm going to have to look that one up. We used to have to read it once in a while, but it's been all over the news. It's been in the water supplies, Hoosick Falls, and some other many places, actually.
Oh, yeah. So some of the stuff from in the Hudson River, for example, or et cetera. There have been cancer related chemicals that have been in the environment, and I guess depending upon the level of those and in the waters, et cetera, that you're exposed to, that does increase the risk. But again, I don't know a quantitative value for that.
Dr. Cliff Connery joins us. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Let's go to Jesse in Albany. Jesse, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just have a quick question for you, which is everybody kind of hears all the time about all these different things that either increase risk for cancer or we all have, horrible diets or anything along those lines or smoking, anything like that. I was just wondering, what's one thing that everybody should know that either we're not paying attention to or that we just haven't been told very much, or just something that everybody should know that will decrease their risk of cancer overall?
Decrease risk for cancer overall. I think that the things to look at are what we sort of mentioned before, Jesse. One is maintain a healthy weight, get some exercise, eat plenty of fruits and vegetables, don't smoke, limit your alcohol intake, and also the thing that we need to look at is be careful about sun exposure, and that's a real issue. So sun exposure, and use appropriate blockade for that. Those are some of the main things that you can do. In addition, then there's the screening. So the screening for a variety of different cancers, but be breast cancer screening with mammography, whether it be HPV screening for cervical carcinoma, colon cancer screening for colonoscopy or the FIT tests, lung cancer screening with the CT scan screening. So the main thing is to do the things that grandma or mom was telling you. Be healthy, eat well, get some exercise, get sleep. That's the other thing too. People tend to forget.
All right,
make sure that you get some sleep.
Why sleep? Why is that important for cancer?
Well, I think sleep overall, for two reasons, is that one is that it improves your overall health. And health is important for you, not just for reducing your cancer risk, but in reality, as far as survivorship is concerned, it allows you to be in a healthier condition to undergo a cancer treatment and to have more options available to you. So your overall health, if you have good sleep, is better.
We're joined today by Dr. Cliff Connery, who is chair of the New Vance Health Cancer Institute. If you have a question about cancer, oncology, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Getting back to Jesse's question about ways to help prevent cancer and our talk at the beginning of the show, you said it's important not to eat too much and to maintain a healthy weight. I want to know, I can see why being obese would affect your cardiovascular system. It's pretty obvious, high blood pressure and such. But what is it about obesity that would affect one's risk for cancer? I'm still confused about that.
Yeah, well, there are a couple of things that occur. With weight, there are some changes in some of the hormones that you have, and it's also in some of the inflammation. And so there are some cancers that are related also to estrogens, for example, or estrogen-like compounds, which you may see in people who have increased weight. And so these are the things that may not be obvious right away, but it changes the environment of the patient's body a little bit, and that increases the risk for cancer.
We're joined today by Dr. Cliff Connery. This email from Steve. And Steve writes, I was recently diagnosed with a melanoma in situ stage. I know that some melanoma tumors are more likely than others to metastasize than others. Can you comment on this and any possible DNA testing of tumors to determine this? And that letter is from Steve.
Okay. So, Steve, one of the main things with melanoma is the depth of tumor invasion. And so that if you had one in situ, that means that it wasn't as deep. So the prognostic implication is greatest for the ones that are deeper into the skin, into the dermis. And so that's where the tumor has more of a chance to spread into the bloodstream or into the lymphatics. And so that's the most important prognostic factor. There are some other differences with the appearance of the melanoma as well, but the biggest thing is the depth of penetration.
We're joined today by Dr. Cliff Connery on this Medical Monday, and Dr. Connery is chair of the New Vance Health Cancer Institute. Our number is 800-348-2551. In your bio, it says you are very skilled at robotic surgeries and procedures and video-assisted procedures, and this fascinates me, the technological leaps we have made in the past 10, 15 years, truly astonishing. What things can you do now minimally invasively that you couldn't do before, say, 5 or 10 years ago?
The robotic technology and some of the other minimally invasive technologies has allowed us to perform very fine procedures through small incisions. The thing that has changed in it, and I've been around long enough to see the change in robotics, is that the optics have improved, so you have high-definition vision with magnification, so you can actually see very well in these small spaces. And then you have, if you think of it, you have instruments at the end of a small stick that have smaller than the size of a dime that have the articulation. It means that can move better than the human wrist can. So in a very tight space with very high magnification, you can use an instrument very precisely and perform very complex procedures that you could not have performed through other types of minimally invasive techniques.
I mean, you've been at this over 30 years. Are the outcomes better now because of this technology?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's you have to take a look at these as a tool. You know, it's not a religion to be using a robot or some other technique. You have to use it when it provides an advantage. And so I think the biggest thing that robotic technology has allowed is that more people can perform a minimally invasive procedure with the robot than they can through regular standard minimally invasive, what we call in the chest, we call it thoracoscopy. And why is that important? When you take a look at results and survivorship, and we look at that very carefully as far as outcomes are concerned, you know, throughout the New Vance system, we look at these numbers carefully. If you have an open procedure in general, that's one extra risk factor for a procedure than if you can have it done effectively as a minimally invasive technique. So it's as if you're adding an additional disease to the person. Now, sometimes you just have to do it that way. But if you can get more physicians and surgeons to be able to use a minimally invasive technique, then it does reduce the risk. It's less stress on the patient in general and less discomfort. And the recovery is a little bit faster if you can get a minimally invasive technique.
Are you guys using AI at all to help in either diagnosing or actually performing surgeries?
We are not using it in performing surgery right now. But when you take a look at screening, one of the things that we're trying to do structurally is to try to improve the access for screening. So across our system now, we're looking at having a program, a computer program, to help us identify people who have incidental findings on an x-ray so that we can make sure that they're getting that highlighted and notified so that they get proper follow-up, and also to make it more make it easier for the follow-up for lung cancer screening to make sure we have the data in a fashion that's in the
right. Dr. Connery, we're having a little bit of a jump in your signal there. I don't know exactly what happened, but you're cutting in and out like Morse code. Can you hear me still?
Yes, okay. I can hear you.
I think we should probably take a break here. It's a little early. Why don't we have? Why don't we call you back and try to reestablish the phone line, and then we will rejoin the show with Dr. Cliff Connery. We'll take a break right now. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. You can email voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll be right back. Well, little Miles Davis never hurt. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. It's a Medical Monday, and we're joined today by Dr. Cliff Connery, chair of the New Vance Health Cancer Center, a cancer institute, I should say. And the email address here is voxpop@wamc.org. Hello, Dr. Connery. Can you hear us now?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh,
thank you.
Sound great. This email came in from Marianne. I'm not sure. My father's two brothers both died of pancreatic cancer in their 70s and 80s. My dad died of a heart attack, and their parents died of cardiovascular issues as well. I'm in my late 70s in good health. Should I be concerned at all about possible inherited risk of pancreatic cancer, or do you think it was just a bad luck of the draw for my uncles?
Yeah, I think that brings up a point that we need to make. One of the things that we need to keep track of is what the family history is and what our genetic predispositions are. Some things we have an idea about, some things are still being learned. Pancreatic cancer, it does appear that there may be some genetic predispositions. In addition, there are a couple of other studies. Indeed, here at New Vance, we have a relatively novel pancreatic cancer a screening program, which looks at people who have genetic tendencies, but also people who are new onset diabetics, because when you think about the pancreas is involved in sugar metabolism a little bit with insulin, et cetera. And so those patients who are new onset diabetics may have a higher incidence of pancreatic cancer. So I do believe that because of the pancreatic history, she should talk with her physician and talk to them about what that risk is, and talk about in more detail what the family history is, and maybe get a genetic counseling or a discussion about this.
We're joined today by Dr. Cliff Connery of New Vance Health, and our number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Carl in New Lebanon. Carl.
How you doing?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. I was recently diagnosed with stage 2 prostate cancer. The doctor that's treating me from a local place in Albany, I won't.
Okay, glad you don't mention that. That's good.
they're opting to remove the prostate or use hormone therapy with radiation. When I brought up radiational seeding, they didn't seem very happy about it. And I'm wondering what the doctor thought about the seeding of the prostate.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Prostate is one of these areas where there are a couple of different treatments that are available, and some of this technology is evolving, and there also may be some differences in what one center has to offer versus another. So, and what their experience is. So there are ways to, and part of this is going to depend upon the exact, location where your tumor is, et cetera, and what your overall health is, and what your tolerance is for side effects. Side effects are a little bit different with surgery than with radiation. Types of radiation can include placement of seeds, depending upon the geometry, I guess, of the tumor, or they can be. There are now some techniques where they use more high dose, less number of treatments, what we call hypofractionated or stereotactic treatments for prostate tumors, and they have certain ways to try to reduce the risk for side effects from the radiation with a type of procedure they call a space order. It sort of buffers the injury from the radiation to the areas around the prostate. So this is something where, you know, you have a chance to get some opinions to talk about it, ask them why they're not happy with the with the seeds and that type of a tumor, and ask for if they can go offer you another opinion from somebody else who does that. I think that can be helpful as well, too. You have time to get a couple of opinions.
Carl, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. On this Medical Monday, Dr. Cliff Connery of New Vance Health Cancer Institute joins us. And let's go to Elizabeth in New Paltz. Elizabeth, you're on.
Hi. I wanted to know whether or not they can use canine dogs' sense of smell to detect any cancers.
Yes, Elizabeth. Thank you for that. And the question was, can you use canine smell to detect types of cancer? And that's, you know, not to be glib, you know, you hear about a CAT scan, but then you hear about the dog scan. In reality, you know, their nose is unbelievable as to their ability to discern types of bombs or pests, you know, or even a sandwich, you know, if you're trying to sneak it through an airport. But in reality, there are some studies which show that dogs can pick up through smelling some of those aromas, I guess, that happen when a cancer is in your body. They can detect a minute change. The problem is, I guess, bandwidth of dogs. Their dogs are being pulled in a bunch of different directions. But I think that this is something that that there is probably going to be more research in that, and then to try to create a mechanical way to mimic what a dog is able to detect.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Dr. Cliff Connery is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Let's go to Linda in Saratoga. Linda.
Hi, I'm calling about the genetic predisposition as well as lifestyle choices. I mean, like my mom died at 39 of a heart attack, but she had 6 kids, worked full-time as a nurse, was overweight and smoked. So where do I draw the line between the genetic predisposition of potential coronary disease, but then again, the possible causes of her lifestyle choices in terms of causing the cardiac arrest?
Thank you. This is a, you know, where do you, it's that environment versus heredity thing. How much is from one versus the other? I think when you have somebody who dies at an early age, you do have to worry a little bit about there being possibly a heritable component to it. And so I think that the thing to do is to make sure that you have a good primary care doctor who can take a look at your risk factors. You know, they can take a look at your cholesterol, they can take a look at whether or not there's a smoking issue, et cetera, and provide guidance for that. Take a look at your exercise. And if it's something that is a little concerning on those measures, you know, then they're, for, in particular for your situation, then maybe there's a different screening test that they could do. They can take a look at a coronary calcium score, for example, to try to give you some idea. So I do think that it's worthwhile for you to talk to your doc, to express this concern, and to look at it a little bit more carefully.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Linda. Dr. Cliff Connery joins us today from New Vance Health Cancer Institute. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Well, let's go back to screening. Why is it there are so many different screening methods for so many different kinds of cancers? It's always puzzled me. Why can't, in other words, if you're going in for a colon cancer check, a simple blood test or something, why can't there be an across-the-board test that covers all the cancers?
Yes. Well, we're not there yet because we don't have any specific markers, you know, for all cancers across the board. Some
types of disease have only one screening test. So, for example, in lung, the only screening test that is useful is actually a CT scan of the chest, and that's the one that is recommended. However, in colon cancer and other diseases, there are several screening tests. The most important thing to remember is that the best screening test is the one that gets done. So if you want to be screened for colon cancer, you know, the gold standard is that you could have a colonoscopy, and if that is negative, then you can get a follow-up scan 10 years later, colonoscopy. But if you're afraid to have a colonoscopy, there are several types of stool tests that can be done that are more precise than the old stool blood test that can give a better idea for whether or not you have what could possibly be a cancer. Now, once you have a stool test, if it's positive, then you'll need a colonoscopy. But, you know, as long as you get that test done, there's a good chance that you will have been effectively screened. So a stool test once a year or a colonoscopy once every 10 years, just as long as you get a screening test done.
Dr. Cliff Connery joins us. You are passionate about healthy living to maintain strength during cancer treatment. And I wonder if you could give us some lifestyle pointers to keep your patient's strength up. And why is that so important?
Well, it's keeping your strength up and your independence up is important, not just for your physical well-being, but also for your mental well-being, your emotional well-being. And so being healthy provides you with the ability when you're dealing with cancer to work with the ups and downs. And it's clearly you have to be more flexible and all. And if you have better health, you have better endurance, you'll be able to work through these challenges. And the same thing goes for the family members who are caregivers for people who have cancer. You know, they actually are under stress and are worried about their loved ones, and the ability for them to have a way to maintain their overall level of fitness, to get some sleep, to exercise a little bit, to reduce the stress, will maintain their emotional stability and their strength to work with their loved one as they're going through the challenge of dealing with cancer.
It's a Medical Monday, and we talk to thoracic surgical oncologist Dr. Cliff Connery from Nuvance Health Cancer Institute. If you have a question, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is our number. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And it looks like Linda wrote in, and I apologize in advance, doctor. I'm going to try to say these medical names properly, but invariably I'll screw them up. Here we go. Can you please discuss follicular lymphoma? Is there any connection between feelings of neuropathy and fibromyalgia? A woman in her mid to late 40s was recently diagnosed with lymphoma, but for several years prior has often had tingling in both the hands and feet. The person was diagnosed after a groin lymph node biopsy. Her lymph nodes in a number of spots in the body are enlarged, measuring between 1 and 2 centimeters. How do you really know when you should receive treatment? And that is from Linda.
Okay. Well, thanks, Linda, for these questions. And one of the things that some cancers can do is that they have what we call paraneoplastic syndrome. So where you can have feelings in other parts of your body, or feel crummy, or have some specific side effects, which may be an indicator which may show up before a cancer is diagnosed. Now, I don't want to go ahead and get people to start thinking that every time they have a tingling or something that they have a cancer, but occasionally that does happen, is that you have some new findings which are otherwise unexplained that can be an indicator of a cancer. As far as, the follicular cancer, so when you actually pull the trigger as to when to start treatment, that's something which, you know, I can't give advice on that right now, but that's something that the oncologist that she's dealing with can help explain that better.
This one is from Susan, and Susan writes, I was not aware of lobular invasive breast cancer, which is one of the most common cancers that women have. Can you explain the difficulties of diagnosing and treating this cancer in women with dense breasts? And that is from Susan.
Right. Well, no, Susan, one of the the challenges with breast imaging is that you don't necessarily find everything with a standard mammogram with people who have dense breasts. So they're, you know, one of the things to talk about with your physician is whether or not there is a role for adjunctive screening measures with either ultrasonography, MRIs, or digital breast tomosynthesis. You know, so these MRIs are magnetic resonance imaging. So there are different types of ways that you can look at this. And, you know, the recommendations are a little variable. You know, there are a whole number of different societies, you know, that make their recommendations as to imaging and mammography, et cetera. And so these options should be discussed with your either your radiologist or your breast surgeon or your breast physician who you see on a routine basis to discuss this. I do not believe that there's any recommendation for yearly MRI screening for people with dense breasts yet, but clearly there are some adjunctive measures that can be done for dense breasts.
You know, it's very confusing for those of us in society and specifically in a newsroom to try to keep up with the changing recommendations for screenings. And it seems like the breast cancer screenings in particular have been in flux over the past few years.
Yeah, indeed they have, Ray. And I think one of the things that needs to be done is there's so much information out there is that you have to have a cadence or a regularity where you bring some experts in to try to educate the team that you have who are managing patients. So, for example, at Nuvance, we have an annual oncology teaching day, for example, where it's geared to the primary care docs, and very frequently it'll be what is the latest as far as the screening recommendations and to sort of go through those to make them understand that and to point them into to the right places where you can see updates in that fashion, because there is a lot of information out there and you need to be updated on that continuously.
All right. In the remaining moments or two we have here, let's talk about the mind. And in your 30-plus years of experience, I wonder if you could maybe, if you have gained any insights as to the mind's power and one's outlook to affect outcomes medically.
You know, when I work with patients and when other people work with patients, the most important thing is to get patients to understand what is the plan. If you give somebody a plan and you point to a goal and you try to educate them as best you can based on your knowledge, people do better with that. They understand what they're up against, they understand the possible pitfalls, and they're willing to then put that into their computer, their own brain, and say, this is for me, Plan B is for me. But they can understand that. Once they understand that, it's an amazing thing when you're dealing with patients, how formidable they are, how tough they are, how they just forge ahead and follow the path. You know, there are always some detours and all, but the mind, if properly educated, which means, you know, give them good advice and let them put that into their own computer, figure out a way to talk to patients so that they understand what their process is, make it in language that's understandable to them. We'll give them an example that works for them. And then it's amazing what humans can do, you know? And I think by understanding, going through a course of treatment, that's the best way to get a good outcome.
When you see patients, and of course, I don't want you to violate HIPAA regulations of any kind with any personal information, but when you see a patient who might have a terribly pessimistic attitude, do you say, we're going to have trouble with this one?
Yeah, well, you do say that. You we are going to have a little bit of an issue, you know. And so it's much easier to point to a goal line and say, hey, you get there. You cross the 100-yard line and, you know, you get to other people you have to sort of drag across. But in reality, it's not the dragging. It's on us as physicians to figure out a way to steer them so that they can get across it themselves. You just have to, you know, sometimes you have to drag them. But in reality, you have to just sort of get them to understand what they're up against and get them across the ways. Some people, it's a little bit more work than others, but that's our job.
Dr. Cliff Connery with us on this Medical Monday, and only about 45 seconds left here. It would appear, and maybe I'm being overly optimistic, that the pandemic is waning and will be behind us soon. What is your hope now that you can focus back on what it is that you focus on, and that's cancer? What is your hope for the next year and for the next 10 years?
Well, it's not just my hope, but it's actually the Commission on Cancer's hope, is that we get back to screening. There was a drop off, you know, over that last year, you know, for a variety of reasons. People weren't getting screened. So we don't only have to get back to screening. We actually have to do more, because we have to make up for the deficit and also recognize that, you know, we weren't completely screening effectively across the country in the first place. You know, the number of people who are eligible for CT scans of the chest who are getting that done is actually probably about 10%. Or less. So we need to go ahead and get more education out across the board for cancer, get not just to return to the way that we were before this pandemic, but to do better. So I think this is a teachable moment for us to look at the way that we engage patients and the community for screening, and to look at ways to reduce barriers, improve education, and get more people screened. That's going to be a real bottom line saver across the country for cancer survival.
Okay. Well, Dr. Connery, this was a great way to wrap up your appearance here on the program. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Ray. Really appreciate it. Thanks to all the callers.
Indeed. Support comes from Dr. Jian Chen, specializing in endoscopic spine surgery and disc regeneration, treating disc hernias, spinal stenosis, and myelopathy. envisionspinesurgery.com for details. Once again, thanks to Dr. Connery of New Vance Health for being here today. Thank you for listening. And as Dr. Connery said, thank you for the calls and the questions and the emails. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our intrepid engineer, and Joe Makowicz screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's gardening, 2 p.m. Get the trowel. I'll see you then. Stand by now for the Media Project.